Speaking to you from the weekend edition of the Commercial News for Saturday and Sunday, February 15th and 16th, 2025. We'll start today's readings on the front page. Patriot Motors, Culver's, Horizon Health coming to Tilton soon. Tilton Mayor ecstatic to welcome several new businesses this year. This is bound to be a big year for Tilton, with not one but three new businesses planning to come to the area, including a new Culver's restaurant, a Horizon Health Clinic, and Patriot Motors. As the mayor, I'm ecstatic, said Mayor William Billy Ware Jr. I'd love to see more things coming here. Patriot Motors moving. Patriot Motors, which is owned by developer Sean Coley, will be moving to Tilton from Danville, a move he said has been in the plan since before he purchased the business from the previous owner of Carmack Car Capital. When I was looking at the deal with the former owner, he always told me his long-term plan was to move to Tilton, Coley said. He showed me a couple of prospective properties that he was interested in, so I think that was kind of the move from the beginning. The previous owner was near retirement age, Coley said, and didn't want to go through building a new building and moving and all that stuff. The 27-acre lot Coley eventually purchased for the project, which sits across the street from Toyota of Tilton, is currently being used as farmland. There are currently only two dealerships in Tilton, Toyota and Chevrolet, and Coley wants to expand the options for area shoppers, first by bringing Honda and Hyundai to the area, and later expanding to include others. The reason I bought 27 acres is because I want to bring other dealerships here as well, Coley said. My goal is to build an auto mall up here. Coming soon. Horizon Health, a healthcare clinic based in Paris, is also coming to Tilton. They will soon be opening a new location in the strip mall behind Rich's Family Restaurant. The move to Tilton came about when a Tilton resident came to a clinic in Edgar County, according to Chief Operating Office of Horizon Health Kim Frank. They were surprised by both the vast number of resources and the quality of care they received. They asked if we would ever consider bringing our services further north, Frank said. Ware credits Tilton resident and property developer Ryan Quick with his assistance in finding a good location for the clinic. I contacted Horizon, who contacted Mr. Quick about his available space. Once they came to an agreement, Mr. Quick went to work remodeling the space to meet their needs. When the new location opens, patients will have access to services including urgent care, women's health, endocrinology, orthopedics, surgery, dermatology, physical rehabilitation, and other specialty medical services, according to the clinic's website. Our teams get to know their patients on a first-name basis, but still offer a wide range of healthcare services to address your needs, Horizon Health CEO Jay Carmichael said. We're excited to bring that concept to the Tilton community. Vermilion County's second Culver's restaurant will also be breaking ground in Tilton soon. It'll be located on a lot just north of Dollar General on Georgetown Road, Ware said. Plans for the local franchise are being reviewed by the Culver's corporate office now, according to the franchise owner, Ware said. Another family restaurant is yet unnamed is also coming this spring and will be built by the same developer who built the new Longview Bank building across from Monocle's Pizza. Why Tilton? The close proximity to Interstate 74 was a key selling point for the new Patriot Motors locations, Coley said. To make it easier on customers and on service aid, the proximity to the interstate is pretty important. Working with the Village of Tilton has been easy and enjoyable, Coley said. They are business friendly, he said of Ware and his staff. I've enjoyed working with them. They welcome businesses with open arms there. Tilton's arms are indeed open, according to Ware. We don't assess real estate tax in Tilton. We run off sales tax. So the more sales tax we generate, that means more amenities for the citizens, like police and fire services, as well as the $21 million sewer plant rebuild, Ware said. Another benefit to the new businesses being built or opened in the area's TIF, or Tax Increment Financing District, is the future revenue. When the area gets reassessed, all the new evaluation revenue comes back to Tilton, he said. Continuing on today's front page, change ahead for the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare. The VA Ileana demolishing their old buildings on the Danville campus, opening a new location in Champaign. And this comes to us from reporter Kayla White. Of the more than 500,000 veterans across the state of Illinois who utilize Veterans Affairs, nearly 2,700 of them live in Vermilion County, according to a 2023 report by the VA. In light of concerns shared by some of those area veterans with the commercial news over the demolition of older buildings on Danville's Ileana VA Medical Campus, as well as concerns about a possible move from Danville to Champaign-Urbana, the commercial news spoke with Dorilis Camacho Torres, Public Affairs Office for the Danville VA Ileana Healthcare System, to get some answers. Are there Buildings being demolished in the Danville VA Medical Center. Our first question. Some of the buildings on VA Eliana's campus have been around since before it was officially established in 1898, making it the eighth oldest VA facility in the country. As part of the ongoing mission to ensure veterans receive timely, high-quality, comprehensive health care in a safe environment, Torres said, VA Eliana is demolishing and removing some administrative buildings on the campus. They've been unused for many years in order to expand its community living center. This mission continues as we update and renovate in a way that preserves our historical legacy, yet improves accessibility and safety for veterans, Torres says. Is the Danville VA closing and moving to Champaign-Urbana? The Danville VA Medical Center is not closing, according to Torres. They will, however, be expanding to Champaign-Urbana in the coming years in their efforts to provide high-quality care to veterans in West Central Illinois. VA Eliana is in the process of exploring options of expanding health care options to veterans in the Champaign-Urbana communities, a statement from the organization said. The new clinic in Champaign-Urbana may not be open for years, according to Torres. This is probably going to take a few years. It's a lengthy process, Torres said. But this is separate from the medical center. That is just so that we can have services to meet the needs of the veterans in that area, Torres said. Our focus continues to be residential care, primary care, and mental health, Torres says. Our final story on today's front page, A Heart Full of Grace. Danville Ambuck seeking nominations for First Citizen Award, again by reporter Kayla White. Everybody can be great because anybody can serve, Martin Luther King Jr. once said. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve, King said. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love. The Danville chapter of Ambucks is currently seeking the community's help in recognizing such hearts and souls. The local chapter of the Volunteer and Community Service Organization has been around for 100 years this May. For 92 of those years, the organization has been recognizing individuals for the work they've contributed to improving the community via its annual First Citizen Award. Ambucks is a national volunteer organization that focuses on providing more independence and better mobility to disabled Americans by working in partnership with physical, occupational, and speech therapists, according to their website. Every year, the organization invites people to nominate members of the community for their acts of service to what member Pat Halloran calls the greater good. We've had titans of industry, we've had special educators, we've also had community activists, Halloran said of previous winners. If you've positively shaped Danville's community in a significant way, you're absolutely eligible. Nominations are made by emailing the organization or sending a physical letter with the name of who is being nominated and why. Because of the nature of the community work Ambuck's members do, Halloran said, they are very rarely surprised to see a name among the nominations. Their names have probably popped up before and will pop up in the future. It could be that they've been accumulating recognition or for the past few years. So if the name keeps popping up, then we think, oh, well, this person has really affected a lot of change in the community, Halloran said. Usually if you're on that list, you don't stop doing good stuff, Halloran said. It's just part of you. It's in your heart. In May each year, one person is chosen from among the nominations the organization receives. The selection of who receives the award is made by a committee of Ambuck's members, a process Halloran said can be difficult at times. It's not an enviable task, having to pick only one person, because there are so many people in our community who are doing fantastic things, he said. But that's also a good problem to have, because there are so many people that are doing good things that it's hard to choose. The winner is honored and given an award at the annual First Citizen Banquet in late May each year. Danville certainly has its challenges, Halloran said, and these folks have risen to that challenge, and they've served selflessly to make our community a better place. The goal of the award is not only to honor one person specifically, Halloran said, but to promote what he calls the necessity and social good that comes along with volunteerism. Although other chapters across the nation have similar awards, Halloran said the First Citizen Award is unique to the Danville chapter. There are some chapters that give out similar awards, but not for 92 years, Halloran said, adding that the Danville chapter of Ambucks has been a pioneer for other chapters across the nation. We're on one of the strongest chapters in the nation. In fact, the nationwide president, Donna Carlton Vish, is from Danville, Halloran said. Nominations can be made by emailing pjhalloran@gmail.com or sending a letter to Ambucks First Citizen, care of Patrick Halloran, at 15821 East 2150 North Road in Danville. And the final deadline for nominations is March. Well, let's take a look at our community briefs to see what is coming up in our community. It looks like Fountain County VFW to have dinner. The Fountain County VFW Auxiliary 2395 will sponsor a meatloaf dinner Friday, February 21st from 5 to 7:30 p.m. at the Post at 1212 Liberty Street in Covington. The menu will include meatloaf, scalloped potatoes, green beans, a roll, and dessert. The cost is $12, but only $10 if you're a veteran. That sounds really good, delicious. The Vermilion County SWCD will be meeting. The regular board meeting of the Vermilion County SWCD will be held on Tuesday, February 18th at 8:30 a.m. at the USDA Service Center on U.S. Route 150. Lions to hear about museum. A representative of the Vermilion County Museum will speak to the Danville Lions Club at noon on Thursday, February 20th. And the Lions Club meets at Spanky's Banquet Hall at 409 East Main Street. Actress performer will be at Liberty Village. Teresa Ross, a local performer and actress, will be the guest of honor at Liberty Estates, Liberty Village of Danville, on February 21st from 3 to 4 p.m. She will be showcasing a variety of music. It's a free event and the public is invited to attend. News from our Capitol, Schweizer to serve on six key House committees in the 104th General Assembly. State Representative Brandon Schweizer was recently appointed to serve on six key House committees in the 104th General Assembly. Schweizer will serve on the following committees: Appropriations, Higher Education, Child Care Access and Early Childhood, Gaming, Small Business, Tech Innovation, Transportation, Regulations, Roads and Bridges, and Veterans Affairs. It is an honor to be selected to serve on these six key House committees, said Representative Schweizer. As a retired United States Marine, business owner, and father, I look forward to bringing my experiences to the table to ensure that good policies are being implemented to best serve Illinois families. There are many issues plaguing Illinois, and I'm committed to confronting them and advocating for much-needed changes. With questions, please reach out to Representative Schweizer at 217-477-0104 or at repschweizer.com. Well, we've launched into some news of our state. Let's take a look at continuing on that theme. Former Colts player and wife arrive at pre-trial hearing without attorneys. This is from Dateline Logansport, Indiana. Former Indianapolis Colts defensive tackle and current pastor of Straightway Indiana Goshen, Daniel Muir, attended his final pre-trial hearing Thursday without an attorney. Similarly, his wife, Kristen Muir, also attended her final pretrial hearing without an attorney. The Muirs are both facing obstruction of justice charges, a level 6 felony. Daniel Muir is also facing a domestic battery charge, which is a Class A misdemeanor. The charges stem from allegations that their 14-year-old son, Bryson, had been physically abused. Daniel Muir explained Thursday that he and his wife were both actively looking to hire an attorney before their previous attorneys were withdrawn from their respective cases. Stephen Kitts II, judge of Cass County Circuit Court, set a status of counsel hearing for February 20th at 1 p.m. The prosecutor asked to move forward with a March 10th jury trial, and Judge Kitts agreed. The path that led to the charges against the Muirs began June 16, 2024, when Bryson's grandmother, Cheryl Wright, told Ohio police she was concerned for his safety shortly before he was picked up from her home by Kristen, Wright's daughter. Later that day, police declared the teenager missing after they didn't find him in Kristen's vehicle shortly after she left the home in Cleveland, Ohio. The next day, two Cass County Department of Child Service agents stood at the gates of Muir's 117-acre religious compound called Straightway Indiana Goshen in Logansport and asked to speak with Bryson to follow up on an abuse complaint. Muir declined their request and refused to accept paperwork that indicated the two caseworkers had stopped by. Leaving the documents at the gate, one of the caseworkers told Muir a judge could issue a warrant to come onto the property and speak with Bryson. All we do is live a peaceful life, but because of that, we constantly receive foolishness, Muir said in a body cam footage captured by a Cass County deputy at the scene. I'm not going to allow you into my home. The court will never come onto this property. It just is what it is. Police issued a silver alert for Bryson on June 25th. He was still unaccounted for, and a photo released by police showed him with a swollen black eye. An early morning raid led by Indiana State Police followed on July 3rd after Daniel and Kristen Muir allegedly refused to cooperate with police to locate their son. Bryson was found on the property safe and well with his parents, who were arrested and taken to Cass County Jail. Both parents were released on bond July 12th. In more news from around our state, Massey attorneys announced $10 million settlement in wrongful death case. This comes to us from the Capital News, Illinois. Wednesday would have been Sonia Massey's 37th birthday. Instead, it was the day her family's lawyer announced a $10 million settlement in their wrongful death lawsuit against Sangamon County and Sangamon County Sheriff's Office. The Sangamon County Board approved the settlement on Tuesday, 7 months after the deputy shot the unarmed woman in her home near Springfield. The Massey family and their attorneys, Benjamin Crump and Antonio Romanucci, released a statement following the announcement. The settlement reached by civil attorneys for the senseless death of Sonia Massey brings some measure of accountability and closure to those who loved her, but nothing can remove the persistent pain, frustration, and grief caused by her senseless death. In the early morning hours of July 6th, Massey called 911 to report a prowler outside her home, setting in motion events that left Massey dying on her kitchen floor and former Sangamon County Deputy Sean Grayson facing charges of first-degree murder. In the days before, Massey was the subject of calls to police, including one from her mother about a mental breakdown. She told police Massey was acting like a paranoid schizophrenic. Dispatchers who sent Grayson to the home didn't relay that information in previous contacts with police and mental health professionals. Grayson's employment record came under scrutiny after the shooting, including that he had worked for 6 departments in 4 years and had 2 convictions for driving under the influence. A Capital News Illinois investigation also found the county hired other deputies with previous convictions for driving under the influence, including one who was involved in a single car crash with a loaded gun and an alcohol level 3 times the legal limit while off duty from his job at another police department. He continues to work for the sheriff's office. Grayson was fired after he was charged. He remains in Macon County Jail awaiting an Illinois Supreme Court decision on his pretrial release. The trial court ordered him to remain in custody, but an appellate court later directed a reassessment of his threat to the public as a private citizen rather than a police officer. Prosecutors appealed to the Illinois Supreme Court, which agreed to review the decision. Jack Campbell, the former Sangamon County Sheriff, announced he would retire after repeated requests for his resignation, including from Governor Jake. Sangamon County has appointed the first woman to hold the sheriff's office, Paula Crouch. In the days following Massey's death, Crump urged Illinois legislators to take action, prompting bills sponsored by Senator Doris Turner, a Democrat in Springfield, and Representative Justin Slater, Democrat Chicago. The bills call for more robust background checks and greater sharing of law enforcement applicants' work and personal history. Sonia's family believes that this type of background check would have raised numerous concerns about the officer who would later take her life, and in creating a more thorough hiring process in Illinois, that tragedies like Sonia's can be prevented, according to Wednesday's statement. The state also continues to test protocols and run pilot programs to implement the Community Emergency Services and Supports Act, or CESA. The law requires mental health professionals rather than police to respond to 911 calls seeking help with mental and behavioral health concerns. The law was supposed to go into effect July 1st of 2022, but the deadline has been extended 3 times as the Illinois Department of Human Services, State Police, and multiple other agencies work through logistics. It is currently to go into effect July 1st, 2025, just days before the first anniversary of Massey's death. The use of deadly force during that encounter is as stunning as it is deeply, deeply sad, the family statement said. It is the hope of Sonia's family that her death can bring change and that the community will continue to say her name so no one ever needlessly loses their life again when all they're asking for is help. Let's turn our attention to today's death notices. Linda Ann Rayburn. Linda Ann Woodrow Rayburn, age 87, of Covington, passed away peacefully on Saturday, February 8th. A private family gravesite service and burial will be held at Mount Hope Cemetery, Covington. Memorial contributions in Linda's memory may be made to the Alzheimer's Association or the charity of the donor's choice. James Jim Wood. James Jim Wood, 82, of Danville, went to be with his Lord and Savior on February 12th at 5:45 a.m. A celebration of life memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday, February 17th at the Second Church of Christ at 3350 East Voorhees Street in Danville. Greg Taylor will officiate. Visitation will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, February 16th at the church, and Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center is assisting the family with further arrangements. Memorials may be made in Jim's memory to the Women's Care Clinic or the Fisher Theater, both located in Danville. And that concludes the reading of today's death notices. I know that some of us have been following that the terrible wreck, Washington, D.C.'s Ronald Reagan National Airport, that occurred on January 29th. And there is in today's paper an update to that. So I thought I would share with you what more information has come forth. Helicopter crew in collision with plane may not have heard key instruction from the tower, NTSB says. And this article is from the Associated Press. The crew of the Army helicopter that collided in midair with an American Airlines jet near Washington, D.C.'s Ronald Reagan National Airport may have had inaccurate altitude readings in the moments before the crash and also may not have heard instructions from air traffic control to move behind the plane, investigators said Friday. National Transportation Safety Board Chairwoman Jennifer Homendy told reporters that the recording from the Black Hawk helicopter cockpit suggested an incomplete radio transmission may have left the crew without understanding how it should shift position just before the January 29th crash, in which all 67 aboard and the two aircraft were killed. That transmission was interrupted. It was stepped on, she said, leaving them unable to hear the word "pass behind the" because the helicopter's microphone key was pressed at the same moment. Homendy said the helicopter was on a check flight that night, where the pilot was undergoing an annual test and a test on using night vision goggles. Investigators believe the crew was wearing night vision goggles throughout the flight. It will take more than a year to get the final NTSB report on the collision, and Homendy warned reporters that many issues were still being probed. "We're only a couple weeks out from the crash," she said. "We have a lot of work to do." The collision was the deadliest plane crash in the United States since 2001, when a jet slammed into a New York City neighborhood just after takeoff, killing all 260 people on board and five more on the ground. The collision likely occurred at an altitude of about 325 feet, investigators have said, which put the Black Hawk above its 200-foot limit for that location. Cockpit conversations a few minutes before the crash indicated conflicting altitude data, Homendy said, with the helicopter's pilot calling out that they were at 300 feet, but the instructor pilot saying it was 400 feet, Homendy said. "At this time, we don't know why there was a discrepancy between the two." Almost immediately after the crash, President Donald Trump publicly faulted the helicopter for flying too high. He also blamed federal diversity and inclusion efforts, particularly regarding air traffic controllers. When pressed by reporters, the president could not back up these claims. A few days later, Trump placed the blame on what he called an obsolete air traffic control system. Well, let's take a break from all this hard news and take a look at Kevin Cullen's comments this morning in his column from The Hitchhiker, Imagining Lincoln. Circuit riding Springfield lawyer talked himself beautiful in Danville. The Danville that Abraham Lincoln knew is gone. With very few exceptions, all of the houses, churches, shops, schools, and storefronts have been torn down and hauled off. But the Lincoln that Danville knew as a circuit riding Springfield lawyer in the 1840s and 1850s can be reimagined. Recently, I stumbled onto a news story dated September 23, 1858, with this headline, Lincoln in Danville. It ran in the Lafayette, Indiana Daily Courier, a Republican newspaper. It presents one of the more interesting first-hand accounts of the clean-shaven pre-war Lincoln that I've read. We yesterday listened to a speech from the competitor of Stephen A. Douglas from the U.S. Senate, from Illinois, it begins. Perhaps no two men in the Union occupy so prominent a position or are the objects of more attention in the present than Lincoln and Douglas. A brief sketch of the personal appearance of the latter personage may not be uninteresting to our readers. The speech was delivered at a Republican barbecue staged in a grove of maple trees in or near modern-day Douglas Park. The crowd was said to be larger than the population of Danville at the time. He, Lincoln, is a long, lean, cadaverous-looking specimen of humanity, standing 6 feet 4 inches in his stockings with a sand hill crane-like body surmounted by a head which looks like a starved, canvassed ham, which with a huge rent in the side, if large enough, would look like his mouth, the story said. The rent, when he laughs, stretches from ear to ear, displaying a fine set of natural teeth, which tends to relieve his otherwise extremely ugly visage. Some people, the unnamed writer noted, can talk themselves beautiful, and so it was with Lincoln. We think that Lincoln talked away at least 50% of his ugliness before the close of his speech. His voice is shrill and not a little harsh, but his articulation is clear and distinct, which enabled him to be heard by almost everyone in the vast multitude assembled to hear Old Abe. His style of speaking is quite the reverse of anything like the spread eagle order. He speaks as if addressing a jury, dealing in facts as they appear from the record of his opponent, drawing his conclusions in an earnest and convincing, though not eloquent, manner. His Danville audience, the writer noted, seemed to be convinced, not charmed or captivated. From our recollection of some of the former efforts of Douglas, we are satisfied that Lincoln and his superior on the stump, though we do not believe he would be able to cope with him on the floor of the Senate. His speech, for the most part, was devoted to a review of the charges brought by Douglas against him and to matters of local interest which had occurred between them since the commencement of their campaign. It was only during the latter portion of his speech, when he took up the question at issue between the two great parties, that he became very interesting to outsiders. It was then that Lincoln prosecuted Douglas and his popular sovereignty position, which would let the men residing in a territory allow slavery by popular vote. Lincoln opposed the expansion of slavery while acknowledging that the Constitution protected slavery in the slave states. The strong point of his Lincoln speech was the scathing review which he gave of the position of Douglas upon the Dred Scott decision and popular sovereignty, the Lafayette Daily Courier reported. He showed by arguments which carried conviction with them that Douglas sought to mold public opinion preparatory to the reception of another decision from the Supreme Court declaring that the states can pass no law prohibiting slavery within their limits since the Constitution protects the institution alike in the states as in the territories. Lincoln, as we know, lost his Senate bid in 1858, but the principles that he expressed in Danville and elsewhere helped give him the presidency of 1860. Not bad for a guy with the body of a crane and a head that resembled a ham. Those comments came to us today by Kevin Cullen, the Irish hiker. Let's turn our final minutes to sports. In local sports, Schlarman eighth graders headed to state. This article was brought to us by Marvin Holman of the Danville Commercial News. The Schlarman Academy eighth grade boys basketball team has had a run based on big moments, but nothing was as big for the Hilltoppers so far in the season than Monday's sectional game. In that game, they would take down Gifford 37-35 to advance to today's IESA Class 8A state quarterfinals. That was the most exciting game I've ever seen them play this season, Schlarman 8th grade coach Terrell Garth said. We were down 10 or 11 with 4 minutes 45 seconds set. I gave them a speech saying, how many of you want to win? And they raised their hands and we said, well, we can't win it for you. They came out, played incredible defense to come back and win with a buzzer beater. Quote from Garth, he says, this is something that we prayed about and spoke into existence. We talked to them that we had a chance to get into state at the start of the year. We had some bumps and hiccups and kids getting sick, but sometimes it's not always the easiest road. We took the hard road and we're going to state. It took determination, hard work, and sticking to our plan. The Hilltoppers will face or have faced Peoria State St. Jude at Warrensburg Latham Middle School. Well, congratulations on an awesome season. I hope you did well. In more sports news, we're just going to take a look at the first parts of a couple of these important articles. Repeat performance. Danville girls prepare to rematch Central, again by Marvin Holman. The Danville girls basketball team just defeated Champaign Central 47-43 on Thursday in their final regular season matchup for both teams. The game was a chance for both teams to get acquainted for Tuesday when they meet again for the IHSA Class 3A regional at Danville High School. Central has speed and quickness and some girls that can knock down some pretty shots, Danville coach Glennie Watson said. They're a pretty well-balanced team for the most part. The first two times we played them, they were not able to generate a lot of offense from their defense because we were not playing with a full team because of injuries, but overall think that they're a solid team. The Vikings have been hit with injuries to some of their key players all season, with Anna Haupt out for the start of the show. Well, ladies, best wishes as you get ready for your sectional play. Westville girls get past BHRA. Both the Westville and Bismarck-Henning-Rossville-Alvin girls basketball teams definitely prepared for playoff action on Thursday. The Tigers took a big lead, but the Blue Devils scored 22 points in the fourth to tie the game at 48-48 after regulation. And in overtime, Westville closed it up with a 9-0 run to get the 57-48 win. Well, let's take a look at what's coming up this week in local sports. For prep boys basketball, Westville will be at La Salette Academy at 6 p.m. on Monday. Also on Monday in prep girls basketball, it's the IHSA Class 1A Regional at Georgetown Ridge Farm. It'll be Sauk Force versus Chrisman or Georgetown Ridge Farm at 6 p.m. The IHSA Class 2A Regional, again still in prep girls basketball, will be at St. Joe Ogden with Kankakee Bishop McNamara versus Paxton Buckley Loda or Oakwood at 6 p.m. And back to the 1A, Georgetown Ridge Farm Heritage will play Schlarman Academy or Shiloh at 7:30, while back to St. Joe at 7:30, you'll find St. Thomas More or Bismarck-Henning against St. Joe Ogden. Lots of stuff coming up this week. Well, as we wrap up our time together, let's take a look at that 7-day forecast for Danville. And let me just read you what it says. Cold, 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 cold. That was Monday through Friday. So our highs for this week look like they will be in those mid-teens, with our lows going down into the single digits. Chances of snow and flurries for Tuesday of this week, but it looks like at least Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we've got sunny skies, but bitterly cold. Well, it is winter in central Illinois. So this has been Terry Burdick reading with you from the Commercial News, the weekend edition for February 15th and 16th. I look forward to reading with you again.